The Tom Woods Show, episode 2121.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Hey, folks, if you've decided it's best not to have your kids educated by people who have declared war on you, then consider the self-taught Ron Paul curriculum. Instructors like me will give your kids an unfair advantage and an education you and I could only have dreamed of. But make sure you join through my link, because only there do you get my $160 worth of free bonuses. My link is ronpaulhomeschool.com. Hey, everybody, Tom Woods here. I am delighted to welcome you to Eric July Week on the Tom Woods Show. Eric July now enters that elite class of people who can say that they've had a week's worth of episodes devoted to them on the Tom Woods Show. Eric has so many areas we could talk about, because he is knowledgeable about and accomplished in so many things. So let's just start with libertarianism. Eric has his own program, For Canon's Sake. He's got a gig over on The Blaze, where Glenn Beck just lets Eric say whatever the heck he wants, and he reaches a wide new audience by doing so, and I couldn't be happier for him. On tomorrow's program, he's going to talk about a major initiative he has going this very year. If you follow Eric closely, you already know what that is. But Eric is really a pioneer in a number of areas. I mean, as I say, we're going to talk about one of those things tomorrow. But of course, on top of everything else Eric does, he is also a musician. He is the front man for the metal band Backwards, and their album Veracity hit number 5 on Billboard's hard rock charts. And we're going to talk about any forthcoming material from Backwards. But Eric is just, he puts me in mind of Dave Smith. He's somebody who knows what we believe and our principles and our ideas and our arguments inside and out, but he can explain them also to a normal person. Unfortunately, we also have a lot of wonks who can only talk to other wonks. And, you know, I suppose there's some merit in that, but we really need people who can reach regular people. That's sort of what I try to do too. Eric is really good at that, just as Dave Smith is. I think Dave's one of our great communicators. Eric is also doing a tremendous job getting our ideas out there. And he does so in a way that's punchy and funny and engaging, so that you can't resist following him. So I hope you guys will do that after you hear him this week, if you haven't already. His website, ericdjuly.com. Eric, welcome to Eric July Week.
What's going on, Tom? I appreciate you having me here again.
Well, I am going to have you over and over again as a guest this week. It's your own week. You've gotten your own week. It's an elite club.
I know. Only a few
belong to, Eric.
I know, man. It's probably way more than what I deserve, for sure.
Get out of here. I remember the day I figured out how much younger than I am you are. And I just thought, get what? This is ridiculous.
So I'm trying, man.
I mean, like, I could be your dad, for goodness sake.
Yeah. That's very true. I'm trying out here, man. I'm just trying to take advantage of my youth. I did.
Well, listen, I want to talk about Eric July in this episode. Then the rest of the week, I've got a lot of ideas that I want to run by you that are related to work that you do that I think will be of benefit to everybody. But let's start off. You are in, I'll just say Texas. Do you want to say more specific than that?
Yeah, I'm in the Dallas area for sure.
Okay, so we can say that. Where'd you grow up?
I grew up in the city of Dallas.
Oh, so you've been there your whole life?
Yeah, I've essentially been here my whole life, born and raised here. Now, yes, there were some times where I'd, you know, relocate. Like, I was in Arkansas for a little bit there. But for the most part, I've been in the Dallas, South Dallas particularly area. So, yeah, born and raised.
All right, so we'll just say you were born, you know, more recently than I was. but you were, like many of us, maybe even most of us, you didn't come out of the womb a full-blown libertarian. That took some time.
True.
Were you like one of these people who was kind of not really politically committed, and then you came across this stuff and you said, hey, I like this? Or were you just really wrong on a lot of things and then you had to change those? Like, how would you describe where you started off when you became mature enough to know about these issues?
Yeah, as much as I like to think that, you know, try to give myself some credit and salvage my youth, can't really do that. I was an idiot politically, and I certainly have no issues admitting that when I was young. So, like, you know, going into 18 years of age, basically being kind of your standard run-of-the-mill mainstream, well, leftist for sure. But I thought I was kind of being cool, you know, with the whole kind of shirt wearing leftist when I was in college freshman year and stuff like that. So it certainly wasn't anything. You're correct in the sense that obviously I didn't come out the womb like that. I was actually on a different side of the spectrum, but a lot of that had to do with kind of upbringing, being, you know, on some edgy stuff as well, fist in the air kind of thing. And then learn about the subject of economics and just really kind of dove into that. And of course, it changed my life having better understood the concept of economics and certainly not what they teach you collegially.
Oh, all right. Yeah. Okay. Back up, because this is really what I want to get into. I assume you saw that picture of Mike Tyson holding Thomas Sowell's book, Basic Economics.
I did see that. I absolutely did.
I thought
see that
was fake. You know, that can't be. Nobody walks around. Even I don't walk around with a Thomas Sowell book visible.
Right.
And here he is, and it's absolutely real.
Yeah, who's going to say anything to him?
And who's going to say anything to him? So you read Walter Williams and Thomas Sowell, you told
Correct.
Me. But these are not the kind of books that you just come across at random. I mean, who put them in your hands?
No, it was one of those things where I was young and I was looking up. I remember looking up, like, I want to know about some black kind of economists, right? Like, isn't, you know, basic Google searches and stuff like that. And again, thank God I stumbled across both of those roughly at this. It was more Walter first, but thank God I stumbled across both of them because, you know, this is the rabbit hole of Googles of the world, YouTubes. And, you know, you have videos of these guys, particularly like Sowell and stuff he was doing with Friedman. And, you know, he's basically, he was having like, these were like life-altering for me. And I know that may sound a little dramatic, but that's actually what it was, to hear some man be able to easily break down some of these concepts that I thought were complex, but they certainly weren't as. That seemed to be the job of the academics to attempt to make this far more complex than what this was. But stumbling across both of those and reading stuff like State Against Blacks and, you know, you mentioned Basic Economics, and becoming more knowledgeable during that time was certainly life-altering. And I'm not dramatizing the event. It was like stumbling across that information and getting it, it really shattered my worldview, but certainly for the better.
Let me take a quick diversion here and ask, who do you think, if anybody, is following in their footsteps today? I mean, of course, Walter Williams is deceased now,
yes.
And Sowell is in his 80s.
Mm-hmm.
Are there other black scholars doing work like theirs of a similar quality that you can say, well, their legacy is being carried on as far as you know?
I hate to say it, but I don't really think so. I think a lot of stuff they did is being more so carried by a lot of people culturally, the less academic, less in the scholarly sense.
Mm.
I had the blessing of being a part of Thomas Sowell's documentary. And, you know, that was, that meant a lot to me, certainly. But, you know, the whole approach was, well, here's this guy, you know, he's in the music realm and he's doing all these other things, who has gained so much influence from the likes of Thomas Sowell. And I think that's where a lot of that stems from. And obviously, I'm probably one of the, if not the biggest fan of the both of them, certainly, but I'm not a scholar by any means. So as long as the torch is getting carried is the way that I see it, these are two just genius men. And just for me to be able to be in a position of any sort of influence where I can say, hey, or someone asks me, hey, what led you to this line of thinking? Or is there some particular work that you would advise me to look at to kind of better understand how you came to your line of thinking? And I could point to them. I guess that's basically what we're going to end up having to do. However, as this catches on more, I think that can also be said for other scholars that are going to be, let's say, influencing future generations, as I think it's just going to show itself and manifest itself ways outside of like the academics and outside of being just purely scholarly because of just the way the world kind of is now. So you're going to see that influence manifest itself in other ways.
And that's fine with me because in a way, although it'd be nice to have another Thomas Sowell,
yeah,
they've kind of done much of the work that we need done. And now we get to the stage where it permeates the culture beyond just the academic realm. And that's where the left really shines, is that they don't keep their ideas confined to the academic realm. It penetrates the culture in various ways. And of course, we need to do that as well. I watched that Sowell documentary that you were in.
Mm.
And as I recall, I didn't know you were going to be in it. And then if there's Eric July. I know that guy. That's really good for him. That is good. Yeah. So, all right. So you're a young-ish, I don't know, how old do you think you were when you came across them?
I was going on probably 19.
Oh, young.
Yeah, I was young, man. I was really young.
Okay. So as a 19-year-old man, what was the basic idea or a couple of ideas that you walked away with from them that you hadn't thought of or believed in before?
It was really, I want to say almost everything, particularly like Walter Williams had this whole State Against Blacks thing where, you know, he had the book and then you had that little long form kind of segment deal that he did. And he was even talking about these subjects and like the Black experience and how like the government being involved, even in something as simple as minimum wage, right? Every young person thinks minimum wage to be higher than what it is right now. And hearing Walter talk about this and be like, you know, hey, you have a lot of these people, Black people, living in areas where they're not going to get virtually anything, you know, out of these rotten school systems. The one place that they can get some sort of useful experience and skills is the workplace. And what the minimum wage has done is essentially priced them completely out of the market and the workplace, allowed them to put themselves, despite these rotten schools, in a position to learn something. And just hearing it broke down like that was big because it shows how even some issues that you may think are legitimate, like if, you know, you look at poverty among Black America and you think there's some problem that the government had something to do with it, these were concepts that were explained by the both of them that attributed to what it is that you certainly had at the time and you still have to this day, but it's just not in a way that we were often understanding it as young people. The approach for your standard young person seemed to be the government needs to do more, and more of the likes of Thomas Sowell and Walter Williams was like, oh, they've done far too much.
Yeah.
And in doing that, that's what got us in this position. So hearing that, and then even comparing and contrasting to like the ages where they grew up, it was mind-blowing, and it certainly put things into perspective.
You mentioned bad schools, and that made me realize I skipped an important topic. Now, listen, I used to teach college students, and I would, in the evenings, I would teach returning students. I would be teaching people. I started as a professor when I was 27, mm-hmm. and I would be teaching people who were 40, 45, 50, sometimes even older, people going back to school, and they would be top-notch students. And they would say, when I was in school the first time, I was a total screw-up, and I was a troublemaker, I didn't pay attention, and now that I'm old enough and mature enough, I can appreciate it. And I say, okay. Right. I'd say, there's no shame in that, all right? Well, I know, because you've told me in the past, you know, you kind of changed the course of your life at one point, like the kinds of things you're up to and whatever.
Yeah.
So how would you describe, first of all, what kind of school did you go to? Did you go to a school that you would say is like one of the lousy schools you were talking about, or did you go to one of the better ones?
I went to certainly a bunch of lousy ones growing up. Like, just to put this in perspective, when I was in, let's say, my freshman year of high school, I was a knucklehead, man. I got kicked out of the school, which wasn't like this good school anyway. I got kicked out of the school, went to another one in Arkansas. This was my mom's last like ditch effort to try to rein me in.
And she has no idea you're going to grow up to be Eric July. She has nothing to worry about.
Right. Exactly. And she, her last, I'm sending this boy to Arkansas. He's going to live with his grandmother. It's going to be a completely different life from this kind of, you know, more, you know, shitty kind of South Dallas culture. And though I didn't appreciate it then, I appreciated it a little more. However, when I came back to Dallas, I was still a knucklehead. And so, you know, I tell people this all the time, like the school that I graduated from was a decent, how I'm not going to say as decent as a public school could get, because it still sucked, right? But it was better than the one that I had went to. And I was supposed to go through. I was driving, and I can say this now, it doesn't matter. I was driving from the school that I graduated from, not from the schools that I went to growing up, but the school that I graduated from was in a city that was like 25 minutes away from where it was that I lived. Basically, yeah, about half an hour away from where it was that I lived, because my mother had finessed addresses and did all this stuff to try to get me to go to a much better school as opposed to the ones that were in South Dallas where we were living. So the one that I graduated from was decent. All the ones up until then were certainly not. And what it does is even when you look at the schools, for example, the one that I graduated from, and just the atmosphere that it kind of cultivated, like, this is why you had so many people that were on either side of the aisle. You had some people come out completely fine, and then you had guys that came out like me, just a knucklehead. Thank God I had, like, I was an athlete, you know, because that was my second ticket right there, more than what I certainly deserved. But that was, again, getting me out of this area, going to another place because I was on track and field scholarship. But yeah, most of the schools that I went to were certainly rotten. Even the one that I graduated from wasn't that good. It just happened to be, I guess it was the least rotten that I went to. Let's just say that.
You know, you said earlier that you're not a scholar, and Dave Smith always says the same thing. And by the way, John Stossel says the same thing.
Yeah.
He says, I'm a journalist and I just report. I'm not the academics who are doing the studies. Well, okay, first of all, I've lived through 2 years of academics doing quote unquote studies. I think I'll take normal people over them any day of the week, right? But Dave says this, and yet I think Dave is a tremendously gifted communicator and he knows the stuff inside and out. And I feel like in that way, you guys are very similar, that you know our stuff inside and out. I can be 100% sure that if some issue comes up, you are going to evaluate it correctly according to our principles because you just know them cold. Because here's something that it's kind of like the principles of unschooling, you know, where they say the children will do the things that they are drawn to. And, you know, they're not going to sit around and as long as you keep an eye on them, they're going to play video games all day if they have real passions in life.
Right.
And you have multiple passions, but certainly one of them has been libertarian ideas. And you must have thrown yourself into that at some point beyond Sowell and Williams. Because as I say, I tune in and listen to you, and I'm just nodding my head the whole time. Yeah, yeah. Eric looks at this exactly the same way I do.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it sent me down a rabbit hole. And, you know, I say this all the time. I mean, it's just Walter and Sowell, you know, that turned into me wanting to know about the different kind of schools of thought. You know, looking into more Chicago and then, you know, going full Rothbard and Austrian was the kind of other route that I went. So it was certainly, you know, I picked up so much information and yeah, it was basically on my, so this wasn't stuff that they were teaching me. I mean, you don't learn this type of stuff. I mean, unless you're lucky to get someone, maybe some fellow from the Mises Institute that happens to be a part of academia, he's a professor.
So this was entirely self-guided study on your part?
Yeah, because I mean, the economics, for example, that they teach in college is not where I was nonsense anyway.
Yeah,
it's Keynesianism, so it's not like it was worth a damn. So yeah, it was more self studied. It was more of I wanted to learn more and I wanted to become more knowledgeable, and I discovered this cool thing and these cool concepts and cool principles that were something that I wanted to value, and that in itself incentivized me to learn more about it.
Hey everybody, let's take just a minute to remind you that there are so many things that people can struggle with, like anxiety and depression and stress and relationship issues, and they afflict us for so long and so regularly that we come to assume that this is just part of life, that there's nothing we can do about this. This is just our fate. In fact, we're so caught in it that the very question of whether it could be avoided, whether there's anything that could be done about it, sometimes doesn't even cross our minds. Well, Woods is here to tell you that there is help in the form of our sponsor, BetterHelp. BetterHelp will figure out exactly what it is you need, match you up with a licensed professional therapist who specializes in what you need. It's convenient, professional, and affordable. You can check out the ton of testimonials on their website. And by the way, just in case they don't fix you up with your perfect therapeutic match, they'll get you another one. So many people have been using BetterHelp that they're recruiting additional counselors in all 50 states. I want you to start living a happier life today. As a listener, you'll get 10% off your first month by visiting betterhelp.com/woods. Join over 1 million people taking charge of their mental health. Again, that's betterhelp, HELP.com/woods. How'd you get into music?
Man, growing up in a church, that was obviously my first exposure to just music overall. My mother was very active in the church. She was the one, I may have not appreciated it at the time, but you know, I made sure that I was going to choir practice and doing
what?
All of that.
Eric July was in the choir?
Yeah, I was.
Oh,
in the choir,
man,
right?
Okay.
I was in the choir, certainly growing up as a youngster, and thank God she did that. Between that and I remember my mother, this is what, probably 98, right? And she had this Lauryn Hill, Miss Education. That was her album. I think it went diamond at the time. I remember her having that tape and me listening to that. And I thought it was the coolest thing in the world because you had this chick who was rapping and she was singing and she was having mixed like some of the gospel influences in there. And I thought it was the coolest thing that I had ever heard, obviously, up until that point in my young life. But that certainly was what did it. Like, I was like, okay, I want to do music. I remember hearing that Lauryn Hill Miseducation album. And it was just more the exploration. You know, people ask me because I've done multiple genres. And then you hear something like Backwards, which is kind of this mesh of, you know, metal and all these other concepts. I had to grow into that because, you know, let's just say definitely where I was from, I don't think anybody would have heard me or wanted to listen to me scream my head off as an artist. So I was rapping and doing stuff like that. It wasn't until I was in college where I actually started to pursue these other interests. So, that's how I got into music. And then that's how it turned into what it turned into now. And to be fair, I think my mother deserves some of that credit, not just with the, you know, her listening to Lauryn Hill and me wanting to listen to that tape. A lot of it was that I had been exposed to a lot of different kind of genres, her era of music, and other stuff, which just had me so intrigued by music.
You've had some commercial and chart success with Backwards, mm-hmm. but now you've got this regular gig at the Blaze that keeps you busy. So is Backwards still a going thing? And would you ever be in a position to tour again?
Absolutely. That is something that, you know, this year I would like to get back on it. Definitely because we have, like, probably it's hard to believe, but we're in a better financial situation now than we were when we first came out. I want to be able to get back on that. The guys want to get back on that. It's just that we're all living comfortably and we want to make it right. So, you know, we have all this stuff that I'm doing right now that's on the verge of being launched. And once that's kind of smooth sailing, we're back. Like, we're going to be officially back. Like, we recorded so much music already, and we're just gonna, I just really can't wait. But yeah, we'll be back on the road soon enough.
Had you recorded actually a bunch of new stuff before the whole COVID thing hit and you've just been hanging on to it rather than release it with not being able to tour?
Funny enough, we were on the verge of announcing the next album like the month the COVID stuff happened.
Oh,
so it changed everything. And I know some people hear that and they're like, wow, so we were about to get new music. And we it's been a couple of years now. We haven't gotten it. That's true. It was just such a, I mean, thank God we didn't release that album, man. And wouldn't have been able to get on the road, at least in a capacity that we certainly wanted to. But yeah, we were about to, our album for the most part is done. The next album. Now we're going to probably clean some stuff up for sure going into it. Now, but yeah, we had recorded it. It was basically done and we were going to announce it. And yeah, man, that the COVID situation hit. And it certainly wasn't because we wouldn't have been willing to get on the road and do our thing. We just knew that it would have basically been illegal for us to do it in some cases. So it was tough. And I'm glad we didn't, though, in retrospect, didn't release it.
Last week, I had a chance to see All That Remains, which, of course, is
nice.
Headed up by our mutual friend, Phil Labonte.
Mm-hmm.
Now, his band is in a not exactly the same genre as Backwards, because Backwards is hard to classify because of there is a rap element to it. But
right.
But there's obviously a strong family resemblance in what you do, yeah. and what he does. And
right.
His kind of band pretty much always is going to tour with a lot of support. And I'm sure maybe in some cases they might even be the support depending on who the headliner is. And I assume that's how you guys tour. Do you have a management company that reaches out to other bands and says, hey, you want to tour with us? Well, how does it work?
So generally how it will work is that, you know, we're scrapping certainly people that we had worked with during the first album cycle. So we're going to be starting from scratch. But yeah, generally how it worked, you'd have a manager and you also have a booking agent. And the booking agent would be, you know, and often a lot of these booking agencies are connected and whatnot, and they're going to figure out what tour is going to be available to you, what the guarantee is going to be, what it's going to look like. So yeah, that, and usually your manager is going to help find your booking agent. But that's almost always how it works, certainly in our genre and stuff. So you're certainly correct that there's a lot of influence. Or rather, we kind of float around the same crowd, me and Phil's band, because he's in a metalcore band after all. And that's kind of the type of metal that we're, I guess, closest resembled to in terms of our influence, because we all came from the metalcore kind of side of things. So that's kind of the approach. It differs a little bit depending on where a lot of these people are, but for the most part, that's generally how it's going to go.
All right. Last thing I want to ask you for this episode is, How did you get this gig at The Blaze? And just describe people, what do you do over there?
I don't know if people remember. This was right around the time Backwards was taking off. It was basically the same year. It was more 2015, around that time, maybe 2014. I can't remember. But I did a interview with Tucker Carlson. This was before he had his own show. This was back when he did Fox and Friends. I was talking about minimum wage and all of that. And that in itself kind of put me on the radar of a lot of people doing that. And Dana Loesch, I always give her credit. Big shout out to her. Though she's not with Blaze anymore, she was my introduction. She was the first thing that I did over at Blaze around that time when she had her own show. And again, this was like 7, 8 years ago. That kind of started the relationship with them as, you know, I do Dana's show a lot. And then every now and then I would, you know, that turned into other people's show. Yeah, like Doc Thompson, rest in peace, who had his show over Blaze, and I would do his. And then that kind of the going into a couple of few years ago, basically, it got to a point, you know, they had just had that. Well, actually, well, no, that was before. That was before the CRT merger that was about to happen. But, you know, it was one of those things where we wanted to have something formal. So I sit down with the president and the CEO, and we chatted. And it was like, hey, they were so interested, like, hey, how do we make it work to where you're more efficient? Not when you just, you know, you come in sparingly and it's, you know, whenever you can type of situation. How can we make this kind of mutually beneficial? Because anytime we have you on any of our shows, gets a lot of people thinking and people get very interactive. How do we make something happen? And yeah, that's how it turned into what I do now, which is basically more of a video contribution. So you'll see me show up on various shows. Those are really my obligations, just showing up various shows, filling in for ex-host or whatever is kind of what I do on the day-to-day. And of course, it certainly benefits me in many different ways. And more importantly, it's exposed me to an audience of people that otherwise would have never heard this message.
Yeah, that is the key thing. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So over the course of this week, we'll talk about that part of it a little bit more. If people want to start following you, what would be the one link that would be best for them to go to?
I would say ericdjuly.com. It has everything me on there, in addition to ways you can support and the various things that I'm doing. So I would say ericdjuly.com. You can get social media and all that from there as well. And that's how you can keep up.
All right. And you use the same company I use for your web design. When I saw what they designed for you, I said, I got to get my homepage redone. This thing is unbelievable. I just love it. I just love how you do so many things, and yet somehow that homepage is totally uncluttered and just beautiful looking. So, I mean, just check it out just for the aesthetics of it, everybody. ericdjuly.com. All right, thanks, Eric. We'll talk tomorrow.
All right, sounds good.
All right, everybody, that's going to do it for today. Tomorrow, we're going to talk about the big thing Eric has going, and it has to do with culture, because it is nice. I mean, I'm an academic. I have nothing against academics. I've written some scholarly books, and they have their place, but we are getting killed in other areas of life. And Eric is doing his part, let's just say. So we're going to talk about that tomorrow. Can't wait for it. See you then.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit TomWoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at Podsworth.com.